Blaze, Oliver Cromwell, a play by John Drinkwater. The National Broadcasting Company presents Great Plays, a series of famous plays selected to show the development of drama from the sunrise performances in ancient Athens down to the contemporary theater. We are privileged to have with us Mr. Burns Mantle, outstanding American drama critic and known throughout the country for his yearly volume of Broadway's best plays. He will act as commentator at today's production of Oliver Cromwell. Mr. Burns Mantle.
John Drinkwater, English poet and playwright, died 2 years ago. He was 54 years old and was cut off from life while he still was following the ascending curve of creative production. We in America remember him best for the historical drama Abraham Lincoln. First, because it was an eloquent stage adaptation of six of the major crises in Lincoln's life, and second, because it came as a bit of a shock to us that we, blessed with playwriting talent and a little boastful of our native alertness of mind, should have had to wait for an English dramatist to do right by one of our greatly beloved heroes. We remember Drinkwater, too, as the author of a farce called Bird in Hand, that, to the surprise of many of us, including the author, ran on and on until it had played for 500 performances in New York alone. He was one of the favorite lecturers of our women's clubs, and you of the little theater groups will remember him as a distinguished founder of your order. For years after he had left Oxford High School, he struggled between the common sense that told him he should go on being an insurance agent, which was his job for 12 years, and in which he was quite successful, and his love of the theater, which was his hobby. He was one of the first to work with Barry Jackson, a sort of youthful Otto Kahn of Birmingham, in the formation of a group that became the Pilgrim Players, and finally the Birmingham Repertory Theater, where Abraham Lincoln was first produced. In this company, John Drinkwater did a little bit of everything, from painting scenery to selling tickets, as many of you have done. He thought some of being an actor and did, in his time, play several parts. In New York, when the play was done here in 1919, with Frank McGlynn as Lincoln, Drinkwater was the chronicler. With the success of Lincoln, Mr. Drinkwater decided to specialize in historical drama. He wrote The Life of Mary Stuart in 1922, and in 1923, that of Oliver Cromwell, which is our play today. The players today include William Podmore as the Oliver Cromwell, Alfred Shirley as Charles I, and Florence Malone as Cromwell's mother. Our opening scene is that of a room in Cromwell's house in Ely. The time is about 1639. It is an early summer evening, and through the windows we may see a sweep of lawn, often used for bowling. Cromwell's life, the wife, Elizabeth, a somewhat testy lady of middle years, is sitting at a table sewing. His mother, a dear old soul of 80, is by an open window reading. It is the mother who speaks.
Oliver troubles me. Restless like me.
He says that the time is uneasy and that we're part of it.
What time is John coming?
By nightfall, he says. Henry Arson is coming with him.
John Hampton is restless, too. He excites the boy.
Yes. But, Mother, you'll do nothing with Oliver by thinking of him as a boy.
Of course he's a boy.
He's 40.
Methuselah.
What?
I said Methuselah.
He says John's the bravest man in England.
Just because he won't pay a tax.
Oliver says it's a wrong tax, this ship money.
There's always something wrong. Keeps men busy, I suppose.
But it was brave of John.
I know, I know. But why must he come here tonight of all in a year? I wish John no harm, but I hope he's got a bad horse.
Oliver's mind is made up about the common, whatever happens. John will make no difference. It's very wrong to take away the common from the people. I think Oliver is right.
Of course he's right, but he'll be no righter for a broken head.
Why, Grandmother, whose head is to be broken?
Your father's. He'd like to be.
You mean tomorrow?
At the meeting, yes.
But he must do it. Why, the people have fished and kept cattle there longer than anyone can remember. Who is an Earl of Bedford to take it away from them? I know I'd let my head be broken first.
You said that the king gave leave.
Then the king gave what wasn't his to give.
Now, child, don't you encourage your father, too.
But I must, Grandmother. Father says that Cousin John Hampton says...
And there's three of you in the house. In one house. And this young Mr. Ireton, he has ideas, too, I believe.
Mr. Ireton is 28.
That accounts for it.
You don't think they just ought to be allowed to take the common away, do you, Grandmother?
Don't encourage your father. He doesn't need it.
I can't help it. The king doesn't deal fairly by people, I'm sure. Men like father must say it.
Have you put the lavender in the room?
No. I'll take it now.
I don't know what will happen. I sometimes think the world isn't worth quarreling about at all. But Oliver is a brave fellow, and John too. All of them. I want them to be brave in peace. That's the way you think at 80. This Mr. Don is a very good poet, but he's rather hard to understand. I suppose that, too, is being 80. Mr. Herrick is very simple. Lord, thou hast given me a cell wherein to dwell, a little house whose humble roof is waterproof, under the stars of which I lie both soft and dry. But Mr. Shakespeare was best of all, I do believe. A very civil gentleman, too. I spoke to him once. That was 40 years ago. The year Oliver was born, I remember. He didn't hold with all this talk against the king.
Oliver finds no offense in kings. It's in a king.
Well, it's all very dangerous. And I'm too old for it.
That will be John and Mr. Ireton. I'll bring them in.
We have been fresh and green. We have been filled with flowers. And ye the walks have been where maids have spent their hours.
How do you do, ma'am?
Well, John Hampton.
Good evening, ma'am.
You're welcome, Mr. Ireton, I'm sure. If you behave yourself, young man.
How may that be, ma'am?
Now, no. Don't ask me. Only... Don't you and John come putting more notions into Oliver's head.
We were told down there that it's tomorrow that my Lord of Bedford and his like are to claim the common right.
Yes.
Mr. Cromwell is to resist, they said.
Now, young men, Oliver doesn't need any urging to it.
But that's fine for Oliver. Every man must speak today and do as well if it comes to it.
Yes. But don't be so proud about it, John.
I think they should be proud.
Cousin John.
Well, Bridget, my girl.
How do you do, Mr. Arthur?
Well, I thank you, mistress.
I'm sorry the judges were against you, John. They're the king's judges, I suppose.
That's what we dispute, ma'am. The king says that they should serve him. We say that they should serve the law.
The law, they said, was the king's old and loyal servant.
That's what we shall have to decide, and before long, I think.
Were you there, Mr. Arton, when Cousin John's case was tried?
Yes.
It was splendid, wasn't it? Although he lost, I mean.
It was a note of deliverance.
Will you give me my shawl, Henry Arkin?
Ma'am.
Thank you. There's Oliver coming. I see him through the window. Now you can all be thunder.
Now, Grandmother, you know you don't think it's just that.
So you have hope for me yet, Miss?
Oh, Grandmother.
John, it's good to see you. You are very welcome, Henry.
Father, Mr. Arkin heard Cousin John's case tried.
Whoever heard that heard history being made, John. It was a great example to set.
One works from the spirit, Oliver.
That's what we must do. You've heard about this affair down here?
The common? Yes.
There's to be no yielding about that.
I'm glad of it, Oliver.
What will it all come to, John?
There are times, Mother, when we may not count the cost.
You're very vexatious sometimes, Oliver.
But you know I'm right in this, Mother.
Being right doesn't make you less vexatious.
Have the men finished in long clothes?
Yes, they'll be here soon.
They all come up from the field for prayers, Mr. Arkin. The day's end.
Is your hay good, Oliver?
I haven't much down this year. What there is good.
The dancers came for some money, Father.
Shall I give them something?
To be sure.
Dancers?
Aye, John. Don't you hold with them?
Oh, they're no offense, perhaps. But I'm never quite sure.
Oh, but be sure, John. I'm all for singing and dancing. The Lord is one to sing and dance, I'll be bound.
Now you talk sense, Oliver. Mr. Herrick is very clear about that, so was David.
Who is Mr. Herrick, ma'am?
He's a poet, young man. And he's for being quiet and not bustling about everywhere. You ought to read him.
Do you know Mr. Herrick's work, Mr. Hampton?
Oh, I've nothing to say against that, though it's not very serious.
Don't be silly, Mr. Hampton, if you'll excuse me for saying so. Mr. Herrick is very serious indeed. Only he isn't always telling us of it.
Yes, perhaps you're right, ma'am. I prefer George Herbert.
Yes, I like his book too, Cousin John.
Well, it's no bad judgment to stand for Mr. Herbert, only I won't have nonsense talked about Mr. Herrick.
Are you ready, Oliver? The men from the farm are gathering on the lawn.
Yes, I'm ready. Brethren in God, at the end of another day's labor, we are met to praise him from whom are the means to labor and its reward. The Lord God walks at our hand. May we be as brothers always, one to another, and may we serve him to serve whom alone is wisdom. In Jesus Christ's name, amen. All people that on earth do dwell.
All people that on earth do dwell.
What do you want?
May we come in?
Why, yes. What have you to say?
It is said that you will oppose the proclamation tomorrow.
Assuredly.
The Earl of Bedford and those with him have not drained these commons for nothing.
Well?
They have earned the rights to be proclaimed tomorrow.
By whose will?
By the king.
These rights of pasture belong to the people. It is within no man's powers to take them away.
The king decrees it.
I know that these rights are the people's above any earl or king whatsoever. The king is to defend our rights, not to destroy them.
It is plain treason.
It is plain sense.
What would you do?
Tomorrow you will proclaim these rights from the people to my lord of Bedford. Tomorrow I shall tell the people that I alone, if need be, will oppose it. These people of Ely shall speak through me. They shall enjoy every foot of the land as long as I have a word or a pound left for resistance.
You are very arrogant, Mr. Cromwell. There are lessons to be learned.
Aye, there are lessons. I do not speak to you, but to your master, to the king himself, if it comes to that. We folk of Ely will use our commons and let the Earl of Bedford keep within his own palings. There are lessons, say you. This is Mr. John Hampden. Will you speak to him of lessons? Mr. Hampden's ship money will be a king's lesson, I tell you.
You should tell your masters all that you see and hear. Tell them that you heard John Hampden say that the king's star chamber was an abomination, that the king soiled his majesty in treating Mr. Prynne and Mr. Bastwick so.
Aye, aye.
And you can say that it is no fear of earls or kings that spared you the whipping you would deserve if you were better than shadows.
Well said, Mr. Arson.
Now, Henry Arson, these agents of the Earl of Bedford may be bears, but I won't have you make this room into a bear pit.
No, friend. These men say but what they are sent to say. I should not speak to you but in the hope that you will report it to those that should know. I am a plain burgess of this city, but I have a faith that the people of this country are born to be, under God, a free people. That is the fundamental principle of this English life. If your masters, be they whom they may, forget that, then, as you say, there will be lessons to be learned. I would have no violence. Let all be by persuasion and tolerance, but these just liberties must not be touched. Will you ask my lord of Bedford to reconsider this?
His lordship will reconsider nothing.
I have no more to say.
Be you wary, Mr. Cromwell. The king's anger is not light.
You threaten idly.
Mr. Cromwell, we do not come...
My mind is fixed. I think I have made my intention clear. That is all. You may go. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Ask your father to stay, will you? We shall want a song after that.
Yes, sir. Father, Master wants you to sing.
Well, the game of Bowlesby, John.
John.
Henry, you too?
Yes. And Mr. Cromwell.
Yes?
I don't know how things are going, but I feel that great events are making and that you and Mr. Hamden here may have the power to use men. If it should be so, I would be used. That's all.
John's the man. I'm likely enough to stay the rest of my days in Ely.
I don't think so, sir.
No? Well. Glass of sherry, John, or gin?
Sherry, Oliver.
Henry?
Sherry, thank you.
Amos?
I'd rather have a pot of ale, Doctor. It might be...
Yes, yes, yes. Bridget, get some ale.
Yes, Father.
Oliver, boy, you are quite
yes,
right.
Father.
All that you said to those men, I mean... I don't approve, mind you, but you were quite right.
Thank you, Mother. I knew you would think so.
I wonder what will come of it. You never know once you begin like this.
No, you never know, wife.
There are lessons to be learned.
That's what they said.
Here is your ale, Amos.
Thank you, Miss Bridget.
Freedom, John.
Freedom.
Now, that's good sherry. I respect not such ill reasoners as would keep all wine out of the country lest men should be drunk. Now, sing, Amos. Come along, John. My game was good last night. I shall beat you.
Oh, yes.
When I shall in the churchyard lie, for Salvo I be, the wheat, the barley, and the rye will better serve for me. His flock, his farms, his fields, he made his daily diligence, nor counted all his earnings paid in pockets full of pence.
We have skipped 3 years and have come to the meeting of the House of Commons in 1641. Cromwell, Ireton, and Hampton are seated close to the speaker. The spirit of rebellion has grown apace. It is now past midnight, but the House is still in session. At the moment, we are listening to the remarks of a member speaking to the question of the passage of a remonstrance of the people.
That the grievances set out in this remonstrance now before you are just is clear. The matter has been debated by us these 8 hours, and none has been able to deny the wrongs which are here set forth. But we must be wary. The king is a king, a necessary part of the government of this country. To pass this remonstrance can be no other than to pass a vote of no confidence in that king. Our liberties must be looked to, but there should be moderation in this act. We must defend ourselves, but we must not challenge the king's authority so.
Mr. Hampton rises.
My friend, I think, is this he. This remonstrance is not against the king. It is from the people of this country against the policy. We desire no judgment. All we ask is redress. I think the king hardly knows the measure of his wrongs against us. This remonstrance has been drawn with all care. Not only is it intent free of blame toward the king's majesty and person, but it can, I hope, be read by no fair-minded man in the way that my friend fears.
Sir, this is a day when every man must speak the truth that is in him, or be silent in shame and forever. Mr. Hamden is my king's man, but I do not read this occasion as he does, nor, let me say, do I fear it, as does our friend who spoke before. That gentleman pleads that this remonstrance is a vote of want of confidence in the king. Mr. Hamden replies that it is no such vote. I say to you that it is such a vote, and that I would pass it with all my heart. Sir, this country, The spirit of man in this country has suffered grievances too great to be borne. By whom are they laid upon us? I say it is by the king. Is a man's estate secure to himself? Is there not ship money? Mr. Hampton can tell you. Is not that the king's affair? Is there not a star chamber? Ask Mr. Prynne and those others. These men disliked the king's church and were bold to say so. And for that each was fined £5,000 and had his ears cut off and is now in prison for life. And does not the star chamber belong to the king? I aim not to overthrow the monarchy, but this can endure no longer. You have but one question raised by this remonstrance. Is England to be governed by the king or by elected representatives of the people? That is what we have now to decide, not for ourselves alone, but for our children in the generations to come. Yes. If the king will profit by a lesson, I, with any man, will be his loyal and loving subject. But at this moment, a lesson must be given. I say it again. This that is now to be put before you is a vote of want of confidence in the king. I would it were so more expressive.
This question could not be argued to an end if we sat here for a week.
Then the question now before the House is whether this declaration shall pass.
Yay!
I think the yeas have it.
It is the beginning.
It may mean terror in this land.
It may. But the country must be delivered. I had thought to live in peace among my Ely acres. I thought none of this. But we must serve. If this remonstrance had been rejected, I would have sold all I have and have never seen England more.
The issue is set. We may have to spend all that we have.
Our goods, our peace. Our lives.
We must be diligent among the people.
It is the Lord's will.
I can speak for many in Nottinghamshire.
They will be needed.
I can spend £1,000 on arms.
Arms. Yes. If it must be. But God may spare us.
No, madam, you can't go in there without permission. I assure you.
Father, I went to our lodging and learned that you were still here.
But what is it, daughter?
Amos here. We had to come.
Well, my boy. There, I can't tell.
Yes. You know he came to London last year.
Yes.
It seems he was in a tavern here one evening, and they were talking about ship money. Seth said it was a bad thing, and he spoke of our cousin Hampton.
He remembered Mr. Hampton when he was at Ely, sir.
He said cousin John was a great patriot because he wouldn't pay. The king's spies were there. Seth was taken. He got a message sent down to Amos. It was to be a star chamber matter.
There wasn't a better lad in the shire, sir.
What has been done?
We don't know. I brought Amos up at once to find you.
They'll not have hurt him, surely.
What will they do? Can't it be stopped?
That's it.
Yes, sir.
Have you heard any Star Chamber news in these last days?
Nothing out of the way, sir. A few croppings and brandings.
Any name?
Jolly Boy was one. Lupton there was, too. He was cropped, both ears. Said a bishop was a man. That was blasphemous. A fellow about ship money. That was savage. Tanner, his name was.
Yes, but not Seth. It wasn't Seth Tanner.
Tanner was all I heard.
What did they do to him?
It's not proper hearing for your sort, but they let him go.
What was it the girl has heart enough?
Both thumbs, both ears, the tongue, and a tea on the forehead.
It wasn't Seth, sir. It couldn't be Seth. Not like that. He was the beauty of the four parishes.
Was he something to do with you, sir?
There is a boy, Seth Tanner, we have a care for.
Because
I made bold to take him in. He was dazed, as it were. Didn't seem to know where to go.
Could we see him?
Nay, it's no place to take you to. But I'll fetch him, if you will. He doesn't sleep.
Do then.
It's not my Seth, is it, sir? Not his tongue and the bloody tea. They who would know how he could sing... And he looked like Gabriel in the book.
Shall we go, Oliver?
No. Let us all see it out.
Father, it's horrible. They don't do things like that, do they?
Dumb. And the bloody tea and the thumbs. With some other poor lad.
There he is, sir.
Oh, that boy.
No. Take him, Bassett.
Yes, sir.
Care for him as you can. And get a surgeon for him. Here's money.
Yes. The bloody thing on his forehead and dumb. Oh, curses on the king.
They came us to our lodging, daughter. Go with them, Ivan. I'll follow.
Yes,
sir. John, you are my best beloved friend.
I praise myself in that more than in most.
I call you to witness Seth is the symbol. Before God, I will not rest until all that it stands for in this unhappy England is less than the dust. Amen.
Amen.
2 o'clock in a stormy morning! 2 o'clock in a stormy morning!
It is an afternoon in the winter of 1642. Cromwell's mother, showing her years a little more than when we first met her, is listening while her granddaughter Bridget reads a letter.
This is God's service, and all must be given. To which end I am now coming home, to call out all such men as have the love of England in their hearts, and fear God. Expect me as soon as you receive this. Your mother I saw here with her nephew. She loves you as I do. Henry Arden comes with me. He served very stoutly at Edge Hill and has a gunshot in the arm. Give my love and duty to your grandmother and affectionate father.
You were born into a great story, child.
It had to come, grandmother. The king was taking all.
It had to come. Men are no wiser than that.
But you do think father is right.
Yes, child, yes. He could do no other. That's his tribute to necessity. He will pay it gratefully, we may be sure.
Oh.
Yes, here they are.
Well, Mother.
Bless you, son. How do you do, Henry Arden?
Ma'am.
Is it Colonel Arden yet?
No, ma'am.
Soon, Mother. He is marked.
Is the arm?
Oh, no, nothing.
The mayor has not come yet?
No, you expect him?
Yes, we must work at once.
That may be the mayor. I will bring him.
Elizabeth sends her devotion to you, Mother.
Thank her truly. Well, boy, it has begun.
We must dispute it to the end now.
May England prosper by you.
With God's help. Amen.
Here is the mayor, Father.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Your good day, Captain Cromwell. Ma'am. Sir.
Will you sit?
At Edge Hill in Warwickshire, I hear.
Yes.
The issue was left uncertain, it said.
Of that battle, yes, but I think the issue was decided there when some few of us learned what must now be done. I will have you send a summons to all the people of this town and countryside. Bid them meet 2 days hence in the marketplace at noon. An army is to be made. We must make it. We have no help with our own hands. Will you send out this summons?
It shall be done this hour. My services.
Good day, and thank you.
You commit yourself, boy, beyond turning back in all this.
Yes, it must be so. The choice has been made in this part.
The Lord prosper you. But I'm an old woman. Age can but have misgivings.
We must have none, Mother. We have gone to this in prayer. We must establish it in belief. No king may be against us. He may lead us, but he may not be against us.
I will be no hindrance, son.
You are my zeal. I grew to it in you.
I must.
How is Seth, Bridget?
He mends daily. Amos tends him like a mother.
I must see them. Send to Mistress Hall and Robert. Let's have music this evening. Anthony, too. Let him bring his flute. There's good music here, Henry.
Robert Hall sings beautifully.
Will you sing, too?
I expect so.
I once tried to learn the flute. It was no good.
Was it very terrible at Edge Hill?
Yes.
Were we really beaten?
No, no. A few saved us from that.
Were you one?
Your father was chief among them.
Was he?
You know what is coming.
Yes. I see it.
We shall live with danger now. It may take years. Many of us will not see the end. We are no longer our own.
These are the best crusades.
To be called thus, to be led by such a one, I know your father will direct it. He must be the man. We must give all truly. It is little enough, Bridget.
Yes.
You promised I might speak again, you said.
Yes.
Will you wed a man so dedicated?
The more for that. Yes, Henry.
Maybe tell your father now.
Yes, if I can but help you to serve.
You shape my service. In you shall all the figures of my service dwell. Will he take this kindly?
Surely. He loves you. He has said it often. Here he comes. Father. Father, Henry Arton has to speak to you.
Eh?
Yes, Mr. Cromwell.
Quite so, Mr. Cromwell. That's very interesting now, isn't it?
By your leave, I would marry Bridget.
I dare say. He's a very foolish young man else. What of Bridget's leave?
He has that.
I should think so, too. Well?
You consent?
I could do nothing more gladly. You are chosen well, both of you. I rejoice for you. But you must wait until this business we have in hand is gathered up a little.
Yes, Father. It is better still.
Let your mother know of the betrothal. I'll write as well.
Tonight.
Seth would like to see you, Henry.
Shall we go?
Oliver.
Yes, Mother.
These are my five little houses in the Huntington Farm.
But it's all you have.
My needs are food. And I have not many days.
I will use them, Mother, worthily, with God's help.
Bless you, my son. Bless you always. And may the mercy of God be upon England.
Upon England. Amen.
Mr. Laws makes beautiful music, Oliver.
Yes, Mother.
Amos and Seth want to speak to you, Father. The men are coming.
Yes.
Come in, Amos and Seth.
Bridget has news for you, Mother. Yes, Amos.
There's to be great wars and spending, I know.
Yes, Amos.
I should like to give the little I've saved. It's a matter of two pounds. It's not a great deal, but it might help by way of an example, as it might be.
That is in true spirit, Amos. It shall be used.
And then, if I might speak for Seth.
Yes? What is it?
He's dumb, sir. It's true. But you'll find no better heart, nor wits. And he has a fair lot of book learning now as well, and has come to handle a pen, for all his poor hands were treated so. He would be your servant, sir, in the wars.
It's a good offer. Very well, Seth. We'll serve together.
The men are coming, Father. Are you ready?
Yes. My friends, I know not to what labor you will next be called, but we are upon dark and proving days coming to memorable issues. We are called to stand for the charter of all men's faith, for the charter which is liberty, which is God. Against us are arrayed the ranks of privilege, but we go to battle in the name of God. Each one of you is here and now called to service in that name. And now may the love of God inform you. In humble courage, let us go forward, nourishing our strength, sure always in our cause. May God bless us and teach us the true valiance, and may he spend us according to his will. Amen. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
The Lord is my shepherd, I have want. He makes me down to lie. In pastures green he leadeth me.
Bye.
It is the night of July 14, 1645. The Battle of Naseby has been fought and won. It has been a grueling fight with defeat staring Fairfax and Ireton in the face until Cromwell and his Ironsides, 600 strong, suddenly appeared over the hill and led the discouraged parliamentarians on to victory. We are in General Fairfax's tent on the field after the battle. Ireton, severely wounded, is being attended by physicians. Cromwell, battered and bandaged, is standing by his couch, anxiously awaiting the surgeon's report.
It is not mortal. You are sure of that?
He's hurt grievously, but he'll live now.
The danger is gone?
Yes, but it will be slow.
Whaley, there. In God's name, man. Tell Sylvie to be down under General Cromwell. There's not a minute to lose. God. God is our strength.
There, my son. Breathe. It is well.
Oh. How is it, Oliver? Out there?
They are scattered.
Scattered? Write to Bridget.
Yes, it is done.
Oh. Read it to me.
My dearest daughter, this in all haste. We have fought today at Naseby. The field at all points is ours. Henry is hurt, but he is well attended, and the surgeons have no fear. He has great honor today for himself and for us all.
He loves you.
He loves you.
You're right, Edison. You must speak very quietly. The Speaker of the House of Commons at Westminster. Sir, this
of which the General advises you is none other but the hand of God. And to him alone belongs the glory wherein none are to share with him. I wish this action may beget thankfulness and humility in all that are concerned in it. He that ventures his life for the liberty of his country, I wish he trust God for the liberty of his conscience, and you for the liberty he fights for. In this he rests, who is your most humble servant. From the camp at Naseby Field in Northamptonshire. They sing well. Winter.
Yes, sir.
Go to General Peyton. Tell him to keep 3 troops of horse 4 miles down the Leicester Road there. He is not to move them till daybreak. Ask Colonel Reed to let me have his figures as soon as he can.
Yes, sir.
Finish that other letter, will you, Seth? I can say this of Naseby. When I saw the enemy draw up and march in gallant order towards us, I could not, riding along about my business, but smile out to God in my praises in assurance of victory. God would, by things that are not, bring to naught the things that are, of which I had great assurance, and God did it.
After the Battle of Naseby, King Charles and his army are prisoners to the Cromwell forces. Though a prisoner, Charles is still treated as a king. Neither Parliament or the army can decide exactly what to do with him. We meet His Majesty now in the room of his secretary, Neil, at Hampton Court. Neil is examining a sealed envelope as the king enters.
Is that from Hamilton?
Yes, sire.
Has it been opened?
I think not.
Good. Commissioners from Scotland are in London. They are prepared to hear from us.
Andrews goes to London tonight.
Everything begins to move for us again. In a week, we should be at Carisbrook.
Do not be too confident, sire. Things have miscarried before.
But not this time, Neil, believe me. Parliament and the army are at odds. I've seen to that. And now Scotland will strike again, and this time mortally.
May your majesty reckon truly.
Is Cromwell coming tonight?
He said not.
Strange that a fellow grows on me. He's a fool, Neil. Brave, but a fool. He sees nothing. Iron, too. They are heavy stuff.
Clods.
Poor country. She needs us again, truly. To check such mummers as these. All means are virtuous for that, Neil. Eh?
Your Majesty knows.
Yes, we need no counsel. You are sure that Cromwell was not coming tonight?
That was as he said, sire.
And let us consider these Scots. Right, Neil?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Clause one. The reason that the Scots should invade England. Let the intrigues of Parliament with the army and its leaders, notably Oliver Cromwell, the peril of the church and the king, stand to the world in justification. Clause two. The royal forces in England shall move when and as the Duke of Hamilton directs. Clause three. The king shall guarantee Presbyterian control in England for 3 years from this date. But the king shall for himself be at liberty to use his own form of divine service. Clause four. All opinion and practice of those who call themselves independent are to be suppressed. To see that this is diligently done may be left to the king's pleasure. Yes, once we are at Carisbrook. A copy of that, Neil. I will sign it. Let it go by Andrews tonight.
Yes, sire.
Yes?
Mr. Cromwell, we did not expect you.
Oh, sir, it is unexpected.
The king, in an effort to cover Neil, steps forward to meet Cromwell and Ireton. The secretary quickly slips the Hamilton letter under a folio on the table. Now, as the others are approaching, Neil bows and retires. King Charles motions Cromwell and Ireton to be seated, and Cromwell takes Neil's place at the desk.
We came, sir, to reassure ourselves.
As to what?
Your Majesty knows that in treating with you as we have done these months past, we have been subject to suspicion.
I imagine that it might be so. But your character and your reputation, Mr. Cromwell, can ignore these.
Continually, we are told that your Majesty will outwit us.
But that is too fantastic. Between men so open, one with another, that there should be any question of duplicity between us is monstrous. We may disagree stubbornly, Mr. Cromwell, but we know each other's thoughts.
I believe it. You know nothing of these Scotch agents in London.
Scotch?
They arrived yesterday.
Who are they?
You do not know, sir?
I indeed know.
It means so much, you see, sir. Intrigues with Scotland. There are none, we are assured. But if there were, it would almost inevitably bring civil war again. No man can consider the possibility of that without desolation.
No, that is unquestionable.
And so I was minded to come and be sure by word of mouth, so to speak. And I have shown, sir, that I trust you.
We are not insensitive.
Parliament bends a little to my persuasion. If I could but induce your Majesty to treat no longer directly with them, but to leave all to me.
It is our Parliament still. We cannot slight them.
But, sir, you confuse things daily. If the army were no longer intact, it would be another matter. But now it is the army that must be satisfied.
But we must consider ourselves. It would be folly to anger the House.
The House can do nothing without us.
Parliament is...
Parliament's demands are not our demands. To give them what they ask will be to lose all opinion in the army. That would be fatal.
Parliament and the army are at one in asking for constitutional safeguards. All are agreed on that. But after that, we are in dispute irreconcilably. They want a Presbyterian despotism. We, the army, demand liberty of opinion. We stand for Bible freedom. And we, sir, are strong enough to make Parliament accept that. But Parliament can never make us accept the tyranny of the Presbyters. We are the new independents, sir. The independents of spirit. We are determined that henceforth in England, no man shall suffer for his faith.
I respect these ambitions.
Do but let us go to the army with that respect. And not a trooper, but will renew your power for you.
Power a little cropped, eh, Mr. Ayrton?
No, sir. Enlarged. I could take all. I do not want it. I want to restore your fortune.
to give you back a regenerate kingship. Will you take it, sir? It is of love I offer it. Love of England, of your great office. Men should be proud to call you king, sir. Let us together make Charles Rex the noblest name of Christendom.
You're very patient.
To great ends. Why do you deliberate, sir? What invention is needed? All is so plain, and many wish you disaster.
We do not fear disaster.
But I offer you an ascendancy undreamt of.
You offer much, and it should prosper. Or I think so. But I must consider. One has old habits not easily to be put by. One grows to kingship, thus or thus. The manner does not readily change. But I will consider it.
Time presses?
Yes, but a day or two. Say 3 days.
3 days, then, sire. I brought your majesty this miniature. It is newly drawn by Mr. Cooper. Very decisive in line, sir.
Yes. A little heavy there in the nostril, perhaps. But good, very, very.
I'm told that Van Dyck admires him.
I've heard him say so.
Very generous of him. The methods are so different.
Van Dyck draws marvelously in sanguine. Let me show you this. Now, that approaches any of the masters, I think.
Good, good, yes, 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 yes. There's great dignity here.
Cromwell has picked up the drawing and with it the folio case to give it a firmer backing. King Charles starts to reach for the exposed letter, but changes his mind. Cromwell, about to put the drawing back, glances casually at the letter. What he sees gives him instant pause. A moment later, his face flushed, he turns and looks fixedly at the king.
What in the name of God is this?
It is private to ourselves.
To ourselves? For our private pleasure, we will destroy this country and blast the people in it? Read it, Ayrton.
These are notes for our own contemplation.
Here are 10 lines of the bitterest damnation that ever came from the mind of treason. The Scots to invade England. The King's arms to be raised again. Presbytery to... Freedom to be destroyed and diligently at the King's pleasure. Word, blaspheming word as we have spoken. Disastrous man.
How far has this gone?
We are not before our judges.
It will come. This iniquity means we know not what new bitterness of destruction. But know this, Charles Stuart, that when we draw the sword again, it is the sword of judgment. Out there, many call you the man of blood. Blood is upon us again. Blood spilled for a perfidious king. My God, how I have feared it. We go to the field again. But then prepare you for the reckoning. It shall be to the uttermost.
This argument is ended.
All arguments are ended.
It is the day of King Charles' execution, January 30, 1649. In Cromwell's London house, Bridget Cromwell has run into the living room and raised the window, calling to her mother. From the near distance, we hear the roll of muffled drums.
Mother!
Yes?
It's the King. He's passing down Whitehall.
Don't look, child.
I can see nothing but the pikehead. The people seem very still. You can hear nothing but the drums.
Oliver has just sent from Whitehall for his great coat. I've sent this with it.
The king has just passed, Grandmother.
He's gone into Whitehall. Men will pity him. He had no pity.
Do you think Father is right, Grandmother? Saying that it had to be so.
Yes, I do think so. Kings should love, too.
When your father wanted to give him back his throne, a little simple honesty in the king would have saved all. But he could not come to that.
The drums have stopped.
Is Henry with your father?
Yes.
What is the time?
Nearly 1 o'clock.
It must be past one.
Oliver will be the foremost man in England.
Henry says he could be king.
That he would never be. I know.
He will have to guide. Oh.
Don't you wish it could have been done without this, Grandmother?
When the world labors in anger, child, He cannot name the hour.
But Henry thinks it is right, too.
If this be wrong, all was wrong.
Yes. Thank you, Grandmother. That is what I wanted. It was necessary.
Henry meant to come back before the end, didn't he?
He said so.
It's very cold.
I think it will snow again.
What are the drums beating again for?
Perhaps. I don't know. Will you have another shawl, Grandmother?
No, thank you.
Has anything happened?
Not yet. In a minute or two. At 1:30. It's 3 minutes yet.
Is Father there?
Yes.
Not alone?
No, Fairfax and Harrison. 5 of them.
The king. Very brave, I suppose.
Yes. That was inevitable. We are old campaigners.
Oliver says that he has been noble since death was certain.
Yes.
If he had but lived so.
He made life ignoble. He would have made it ignoble again. And always. He was a king. And he despoiled his people. And that is, king must perish.
Oliver will be here directly. Shut the window, Henry.
Years later at Whitehall, where Cromwell has lived since being made protector, his mother is dying. She is 94 now. Elizabeth Cromwell is standing by the dying woman's bed. She reaches down to smooth the pillow.
Yes. Is that comfortable? Yes, my dear. Most comfortable.
Brigid is coming now. I must go down to Cheapside.
Here we go. Brigid is a good girl. I may be asleep before you come back. Good night.
Good night.
Bridget.
Yes, Mum.
Can you come? I'm going now.
Shall I read, Grandmother?
Yes. Just a little. Mr. Milton was reading to me this afternoon. He's just begun a very good poem about Eden and the fall of man. He writes extremely well. But I think I should like to hear something about it. That young Mr. Marvel. You'll find something of his in that book.
Meanwhile, the mind, from pleasureless, withdraws into its happiness. The mind, that ocean where each kind of straight its own resemblance finds. Yet it creates, transcending these, far other worlds and other seas, annihilating all that's made to a green thought in a green shade.
Yes. Far other worlds and other seas. I wish your father would come. I want to go to sleep, but you never know.
I think Father's coming now.
Well, Mother dear.
I'm glad you've come, my son. Though you are very busy, I'm sure.
Is there anything I can do?
No, thank you. What date is this?
The 2nd of November.
Nearly a year since they made you protector, then?
Yes. I wonder.
You need not, son. You were right. There was none other. And you were right not to take a crown.
The monarchy will return. I know that.
Why not always a commonwealth like this, Father?
Hereafter, there shall be a true commonwealth. We have done that for England. But there must be a king. There's no one to follow me. I am an interlude, as it were. But henceforth, kings will be for the defense of this realm, not to use it. That has been our work. It is so, Mother.
Truly, I think it will be a freer land because you've lived in it, my son. Our name may be forgotten, but that doesn't matter. You serve faithfully. I'm proud.
You have been my blessed friend.
It was kind of Mr. Milton to come this afternoon. I can't remember whether I thanked him as I should like to or not.
He likes to come.
Be kind to all poets, Oliver. They've been very kind to me. And they have the best doctrine.
That is an aim of mine. Find all men of worth and learning and genius to give them due employment. The Lord speaks through them, I know. I would have none fail or want under my government.
I know that. Bridget, girl, be a stay to your father and your mother. They love you.
I will cherish my father's great estate, and I will be humble always.
And now, I'm tired. Bless you, Oliver, my son. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you, comfort you in all your adversity, and enable you to do great things for the glory of your most high God, and to be a relief unto his people. My dear son, I leave my heart. Good night. Is Amy Stammer here?
Yes, grandmother.
Ask him to sing to me, very quietly. The song he sang that night at Ely, you remember? When John and Henry were there? Oliver, you have been a good son.
Mother, dear.
Here is Amy, grandmother.
I'm a church that my foot sorrow I be, the wheat, the barley, and the rice will better serve for me.
How quietly she sleeps.
Daughter,
we must be loving one with another. No man is sure of himself ever. He can but pray, Buffy.
Father, you have done all that a man might do. You have delivered England.
I have said a word for freedom, a poor, confused word. It is all I could reach to. We are frail with our passions. We are beset. Lord, thou hast made me so very unworthy a mean instrument to do the people some good and thee service. And many of them have set too high a value upon thee. Though others wish and will be glad of my death.
And so we leave the high-minded Cromwell, still seeking guidance from the God whose problem child he had been for many turbulent years. Next week we shall cross the Irish Sea and take up a popular comedy written by Lennox Robinson, pioneer leader of Ireland's Abbey Theatre. This will be The White-Headed Boy, the last but one of our great play series. Hope you enjoy.
Today's performance of Oliver Cromwell by John Drinkwater was adapted and directed by Charles Warburton. And the cast was as follows: Oliver Cromwell by William Podmore, King Charles I by Alfred Shirley, and Cromwell's mother, Florence Malone. The music was arranged and conducted by Joseph Honte. The Great Plays series is an educational feature of the National Broadcasting Company. Next week, The White-Headed Boy by Lennox Robinson will be presented. A study manual, part two, giving complete background material for the great plays by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience at the cost of 10 cents. Send coin or money orders to the National Broadcasting Company in care of Great Plays, Radio City, New York. Consult your local library for reading material on the remaining great plays of the series. John Drinkwater's Oliver Cromwell was a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.